Welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Bridget Danner. Happy to have you back. And our guest today is Andrea Thorpe. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Bridget. How are you?
I'm great. And Andrea has the special honor of being our first person to be on the show twice.
So, oh,
yeah.
I am honored. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. And man, you just totally rocked it last time talking about Hashimoto's, and I'll share the link to that show on the show notes. And today we're going to talk about something a little different, and the topic of perimenopause and how can we approach that functionally through Chinese medicine, through nutrition. I think it's an important topic. My audience is a mix of people looking to get pregnant or just looking to stay healthy through their reproductive years. And inevitably, we're all getting older. This is good information for all of us.
Nobody escapes that one.
No. So, yeah, before we get into that, I just want to give a little background on you. So you're at the Lotus Center for Integrative Medicine. It's lotuscenter.com. Where is it located?
We're in South Pasadena in Los Angeles.
South Pasadena. Okay. Yeah. And tell us just a little bit more about your clinic and what you do there.
Oh, well, we are a group practice. We have six practitioners. All of us practice Chinese medicine. we are affiliated with a number of different reproductive endocrinologists, nutritional therapists, nurse practitioners. And we have a really very solid system of referrals and support for patients. So most of our patients come in, we have a big bulk of patients who are coming in for fertility issues. And then we have individual practitioners who specialize in different things. So my specialty is fertility, female health. But of course, within the female health, I'm now, as I move towards that perimenopausal transition, it seems that my patients, that my patient body seems to be of that nature. So we offer comprehensive analyses through these other practitioners. So we do nutritional testing, hormone, urine panels, and this way we're able to provide both solid Chinese medical support as well as Western medical, functional medical support.
Yeah, it's such a great mix. And share with our listeners a little more about your personal training. You've got a really interesting story and you're still studying. So tell us more.
The perpetual student. I think it's a complex more than anything else. It's that feeling that you don't know enough, which is, anyway, I have to get over that at some point. I initiated my studies in Chinese medicine 24 years ago in London. And I graduated from a college in London that is now affiliated with the University of Westminster. From that place, we all, thanks to a lot to the intervention of Prince Charles, funnily enough, we all went to work in the Western medical environment because there were subsidies provided to practitioners, to MDs who actually took on acupuncturists. So I went to work in a psychiatric ward in a hospital in Southwest London, and there I spent a year treating drug addiction. The reason I did this was I really wanted to see how Chinese medicine worked, how powerful it was, and that body of patients, most of them were coming off methadone, and we had incredible success rates with using acupuncture, auricular acupuncture, on a daily basis with these patients. So it really reinforced my belief in the medicine and how an incredible system that it is. And from there, I went and did numerous trips to China, and really had this heartfelt desire to study the medicine at the source. that was not as magical as I'd expected. It's very standardized, the medicine, how it's practiced in China. And so I eventually ended up coming to the States. And here I retrained because my English qualifications weren't accepted. So I retrained at Yosan University, and there I studied with the two founders of the university. I actually went on to become a fellow at their practice. So really, really embracing how Chinese medicine is practiced from people who have been practicing Chinese medicine for 38 generations. It was really a unique opportunity. And again, being the perpetual student, I moved on from there, and then I engaged in a PhD program. And this, again, is studying with another multi-generational practitioner. His name is Jeffrey Yuen. And what this practitioner offers is the study of the classics, which is really the heart of Chinese medicine. The classics provide the unadulterated theoretical underpinnings of the medicine, which were largely destroyed during the Cultural Revolution. So I'm totally embracing this new classical approach to the medicine, and there we go. I'm currently engaged in a PhD, so that's my background. Still studying.
So what the PhD, you have like a specific topic you choose and you're approved of? Is that kind of how it works?
Yes. So there's coursework involved. You have to do course requirements, units and papers and so on and so forth. But then you have, from the get-go, you really want to be starting to formulate what your thesis is. And then everything that you do in terms of coursework to inform that thesis. So hormones is really at the heart of what I'm studying. So studying it from the perspective of the classical texts, but also introducing what I'm trying to do, and this is a behemoth of a task, I'm trying to marry functional medical concepts with Chinese classical medical theory concepts. And what I'm finding is that there's a lot of crossover. So it's very interesting. It's also incredibly complex. And of course, I chose one of the most difficult systems to learn in the body. I mean, I could have studied, you know, musculoskeletal issues. That would have been far easier. But the hormonal system seems to be, it's fascinating. It really, truly is incredible. And, you know, with all the research that's coming out now of how the hormonal system, and this is now, you know, they're posting on Facebook very in the last 2 weeks, how the hormonal system is so closely interlinked with the neurological system, so closely interlinked with the immunological system. My first interest came about, I started studying, looking into Hashimoto's, which is what I talked about in the first talk that I gave with you, and just seeing how there is just an explosion of Hashimoto's. I think I have one in every five patients that walks through my practice has Hashimoto's. So seeing how environmental factors, seeing how why do we have these autoimmune conditions? So then it's again studying this link between the immune system and hormones. So I'm still in the throes of it, trying to create some sort of a theory about it. But again, Chinese medicine is unique in that it's that the basic theories are not too difficult to comprehend. What becomes complex is how all systems, organ systems in the body are interlinked. And so when looking at a patient, a particular patient, a given patient, you cannot look at anything in isolation. You have to take all the components into consideration in terms of then how you apply acupuncture treatments, how you apply herbal treatments, how you apply nutritional treatments. And each person is very, very unique. And it's this constant talk that happens between these systems, which they're now discovering happens within the Western systems. The hormone system talks to the neurological system, it talks to the immune system, and how imbalances in one can lead to a cascade of imbalances in the other. So everything is very closely interlinked. It's this beautiful network. And studying that network closely and seeing patterns within that network is really what Chinese medicine is all about. And it's unique in that respect. It's 5,000 years worth of observation of these patterns. What the Cultural Revolution did is they tried to standardize the medicine. So they tried to compartmentalize it and become a little bit more westernized. And so they lost a little bit of that art of seeing the interconnectedness of organ systems. But classical Chinese medicine embraces that beyond to a great measure, also incorporating psycho-spiritual aspects of health. So anyway, I can go into that on and on and on. But with regards to perimenopause and the menopausal transition, what you're seeing is you're seeing one system. So if we look at it from purely the Western perspective, you have a decline in ovarian function. Okay, and that's what you look at. So the ovaries start to slow down; they produce less follicles, and then what happens is that the ovary function is a feedback system with the pituitary, hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis, is what it's called, HPO axis. What happens is the pituitary starts to tell the ovaries, no, 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 you can't slow down. We've still got some left. And they start to send louder messages. This is what we call the follicular stimulating hormone. FSH levels start to go up. So this is a little bit like the screaming match starts to happen. And then the ovaries respond some months and you have these surges in estrogen, and then other months it doesn't respond. So you have these alternating cycles that happen in the menstrual cycle, where you sometimes skip a cycle, other times you have a horrific cycle with tremendous amount of bleeding. And so the answer from an allopathic perspective is, well, okay, let's look at this from a hormone perspective. Let's see what's going on with the hormones. So you have a screaming pituitary and ovaries that are fluctuating from high levels of estrogen to very, very low levels of estrogen. And not only that, is that you then have a fluctuation between balances, levels of estrogen and progesterone, and those within the menstrual cycle are very, very closely balanced. So what happens is the system becomes a little bit discombobulated. So the solution then is, okay, well, if we have estrogen going up and down, let's just add some more estrogen to that, and that might calm things down. Or better still, let's add some progesterone to that, and that will calm things down. And it actually does temporarily do that. And by the way, just for the record, I am not adverse to the women taking hormones, bioidentical hormones. I have opinions about synthetic hormones. But basically, if somebody's in the throes of a crisis, which a lot of women find themselves in, so menopausal symptoms don't just become physical, they're also psychological. So women experience severe sleep deprivation, they experience tremendous mood swings, as well as all the physical symptoms of hot flashes and so on and so forth. In those situations, if somebody's in really, really crisis mode, then small doses of hormones can be quite helpful. But again, let's go back to the initial theory. You can't just look at what's going on with the ovaries and the pituitary. You can't just look at what's going on with estrogen and progesterone levels. You have to look at the whole system of the whole endocrinological system. So what happens when one system goes down is other systems start to compensate. And what we have to understand is that most of my generation of women, I'm 45, we come from a generation where we've all taken birth control pill. Some of us have done IVF. Most of us have been exposed to the low-fat diet. So these are three big key things. And most of us are professionals, and our adrenals are incredibly taxed. So when there's a shift from estrogen production, and I'm just keeping it simple, from the ovaries to the adrenals, we need to look and see what's going on with those adrenals. And most of these women are coming in with severe adrenal fatigue. So what happens in those situations is that you don't have a support system. So you're converting then, you're going from conversion of estrogen from the ovaries to estrogen the adrenals, because the adrenals also produce estrogen, but they're tired, they're exhausted. In this situation, women's symptoms become really, really exacerbated. The other thing that you need to look at is the status of the liver as an organ. The liver's in charge of metabolizing, detoxifying all hormones, all toxins, all foods from the system. And in a world of incredible amount of toxins in the system, and I can go about predominantly, let's keep it simple, let's look at estrogen, zinoestrogens. What they do is they congest the liver. If you look at people's diets, they process diets, they drink a lot of caffeine, they eat sugar, they eat refined carbohydrates. And predominantly what you have is a diet that is devoid of nutrients. And let me just go quickly start to segue into the nutrition. I think the biggest disservice that has been done to the population of women is the low-fat diet. Mm. The low-fat diet has created the biggest epidemic of obesity epidemic in the world, as they've introduced low fat, people moved towards carbohydrates, thinking that was a good thing. They then said, okay, sodas are not a good idea, but let's do sodas that have artificial sweeteners that have no calories. Obesity has increased. So why is that? The reason is fat. Fat has been touted as the big offender here. They created a link between elevated cholesterol levels and fat consumption, which is completely erroneous. Cholesterol levels being elevated is not a symptom of overconsumption of animal fats. It's a symptom of inflammation in the body. And for those, you can accuse the trans fats, you can accuse sugar, and you can accuse refined carbohydrates. So taking the fats out of the diets, fats, and particularly saturated fats and cholesterol-containing fats, okay, so this is butter, lard, ghee, yes, they're all good for you, they have been touted as bad fats. And what happens, what they don't tell you, it's two things. One is that these fats are essential for hormone production in the body. And so what we've been doing all of these years and trying to keep a slim waistline is we have been devoiding our body of the nutrients that they need, the fat that it needs, the cholesterol that it needs to form hormones. And to add to that, if we look a little bit into the Western perspective of nutrition, of what nutritional deficiencies we have, hormones require fat-soluble vitamins in order to be produced. You also require fat-soluble vitamins in order to have a proper liver function. And so not having fats, and particularly saturated fats in the diet, has given women a complete nutritional deficiency that specifically focuses on the support of the hormonal system. So that sets us back, and especially my generation of women who grew up in the 70s and the 80s was the big low-fat diet time, that sets us back tremendously in order to make this transition through to menopause in a smooth manner. And again, this is menopause and perimenopause is a transitional time. And if your body contains the right nutrients, the right substrate of nutrients, that transition is not without bumps, but it will happen much more smoothly if we provide that nutritional support. And again, I don't want to put my finger on one particular thing, but I would say that the low-fat diet has been the biggest disservice that has been done to women in that respect.
Okay, so I'd love to let's recap what we got so far. So modern women entering perimenopause probably have been on some kind of birth control, maybe for a long time. So one factor that's sort of new to our generation. Another is that we're mainly career women, and plus, society's changed a lot, even in our lifetime with stimulation and all that technology. And then another thing that's changed is the introduction of the low-fat diet and the increase of processed foods, so inflammatory foods, devoid of nutrition, and then a low-fat diet that isn't allowing us to make enough hormones, not getting enough fat-soluble vitamins. And I think the last thing you mentioned was liver function. So external, estrogens plus everything else in our environment we are processing, all this is affecting where we're at when we enter perimenopause. Does that kind of get us started?
Yeah, this is getting us started beautifully. So,
okay, where do we go from here?
So let's break it down a little bit more. So we've talked about the need for essential fatty acids and how important that is. We've talked about the needs of fat soluble vitamins for hormone production. But let's look at the different systems that go off kilter when you go through menopause. So we talked about the adrenals. Let's talk about the thyroid for a second. A lot of menopausal transitional symptoms can be attributed to low thyroid function. And so again, when you go to the Western MD and they say, okay, well, we're just going to give you some estrogen, maybe some progesterone cream, and this should balance things out. If they fail to look at the thyroid, they're not supporting the body properly. Now, the thyroid, I'm segueing now into my next big bulk of nutrients, it requires very good amounts of zinc, selenium, and vitamin C in order to function. But zinc and selenium in particular, and magnesium is used to support the thyroid function as well. So if we have a diet that is devoid of mineral content, okay, so these again, these denatured foods, then you're not giving your body the nutritional support that it requires for proper metabolic function. So the big complaints when you're going through these transitions is, oh my goodness, I've gained 6 pounds or I've gained 10 pounds and no amount of dieting changes that and no amount of exercise changes that. Well, let's look at it from the point of view of, well, maybe now our nutritional requirements are greater when we're making this transition. Because remember that the other organ systems support, right? The thyroid is trying to support what's going on in the adrenals, what's going on in the ovaries. The thyroid's trying to support it. But if it's devoid of the nutritional support that it needs because we have a low mineral diet. So let me go into low mineral diets. What's a low mineral diet? Processed foods, for sure. A lack of organic produce. And here's the kicker. I come from part of the world where you tell people to eat liver and they go, okay, you know, in Europe, organ meats are eaten on a regular basis. It's considered a normal part of the diet. And I tell my patients here in the States, well, you need to go and eat some liver. And I get faces being pulled. But organ meats contain very high amounts of these minerals. They also contain the high amounts of the fat-soluble vitamins. So one of the big things together with the low-fat diet is the lack of consumption of organ meats and how that lack of minerals fails to support the body and its needs. Let me just quickly segue into, I'm sure people are asking questions now in their head, well, what about supplements? What about supplements? And here's my take on supplements. Yes, there are instances when supplementation is absolutely essential, but it should be used as medicine and it should not be used for long periods of time for a couple of reasons. One, these are very, very concentrated forms of nutrition, and they're taxing to the body, they're taxing to the liver, and in high dosages and for prolonged periods of time, they can actually become toxic. They've got studies on vitamin A, they've got studies on vitamin E out there that clearly shows this. I'm a big proponent of food because food not only provides bioavailable nutrients, but food is also the source of great joy. One thing that's lost when women, and I have women come in who are having, you know, 20 or 30 hot flashes a day, can't sleep at night, you know, the joy has gone out. Food actually helps restore that. And what it does is in the preparation of food and going to the farmer's market and purchasing food and looking, talking to the vendors, how do you make this? And preparing the food, it actually creates this whole energy around taking care of yourself, which, you know, if we're going through this transition and we're mothers and we're career women and we've got all these other things going, we don't really take much time to do those things, and that really is important. So again, it's not just the bioavailability of nutrients from food, but it's also the joy around preparation and purchasing and so on and so forth. So again, Minerals are so important, and the only way to get adequate amount of minerals is to eat organic produce that is minimally processed and to incorporate small amounts of meats that are grass-fed and organ meats. And again, I cannot stress enough the importance of eating animal products that come from animals that are raised in a humane and healthful way, because what you're eating is what they have been exposed to. So if you're eating an animal that's being on a cattle lot, you can be sure that you're not eating a good quality food that's going to be helpful and supportive to your health. So that segues into minerals. Do you have any questions?
No, keep going.
Okay. So the other thing is, and again, this is around the subject of supplements, and it's around the subject of how we absorb foods, is the health of the gut. And so what we see a lot of, and we do digestive panels on people, by that we mean we basically do stool analyses on patients and get it sent off, and we see what the microbiome of the gut of the large intestine is like, and the whole digestive tract for that matter. And what we find is there are so many components to digestion, and what happens when the menopausal transition starts to happen is a lot of women who have underlying digestive issues have a much harder time because they're not breaking foods down properly, because they're not digesting foods properly. And so one of two aspects, one is basically women have, especially if there's thyroid involvement, and the thyroid starts to slow down, is that stomach acid starts to decrease, and you have a condition called hypochloridria. So you don't have enough acids to break down those amino acids and those proteins. The other thing to take into account is you want to look at the health of the liver and the gallbladder, and I'll go a little bit more into detail on the liver in a second, because the liver, and specifically bile fats, bile salts are there to emulsify fats. And again, if you're wanting these fat-soluble vitamins, you're having a higher fat content in the diet, you want to ensure that you are breaking it down. And this is where Chinese medicine just comes to flourish, because we can support those functions in the body. If you go further down the digestive tract, you also know that digestion is a function of enzymes, okay? So with the spleen and the pancreas predominantly. And so this, what you want to be looking at is eating foods that are enzymatically rich. Now, what does that mean? It means foods that are alive. Does that mean raw? Not necessarily. But my colleagues make fun of me because I make my own kraut, and I make millions of different variations on the theme, and I'm incredibly enthusiastic about it. I give it to my patients. And what happens is that these fermented foods provide everything that you need. They provide enzymes, they provide stomach acid, they allow for emulsification of fats because they stimulate the gallbladder and the liver. And to boot, they provide probiotics for the gut. Now, in talking about fat-soluble vitamins, and talking about absorption of nutrients happen predominantly in the small intestine and in the large intestine to a lesser extent. But the bacterial content, and this they've done numerous studies now, it's really all out there. If you Google it, microbiome of the gut and obesity, what they find is that the bacterial content of the gut of people who are obese is very different to people who are not. And this is largely a function of diversity. So I'm a big gardener, and I look at each individual plant and how it's doing in its own little space in the garden. And I feed plants different things just to see how they react differently. And that biodiversity, the amount of bacteria in a given area around the plant, can make the difference between something thriving and something not going anywhere at all. So again, in order to absorb fats, in order to break them down and absorb them, because digestion is just not just a function of breaking down, it's a function of absorption, and we have to support those two functions. We need to include in the diet foods that are helping that process. And again, kraut is not the only one. Fermented foods are not the only ones, but they played a huge part. And again, do I take probiotics? Is that going to help? Well, yes. I mean, if you have a severe deficiency and you have a lot of gastrointestinal issues, maybe a course of probiotics is a good idea. But again, I'm a big proponent of food. And if people want more information of just how powerful food is as a medicine, just go to the Western Price Foundation. This is a wonderful website. And this was a foundation created by a dentist who went around the world looking at people's teeth and who saw basically if people kept to their traditional diets, they had no cavities. And as soon as processed foods that are devoid of enzymes, devoid of bacteria, devoid of any form of nutrients, their teeth started to rot. So we need to look at that really, really, really closely, and how we can support the body. And we have tons of stuff on our website as well. If you go to the Lotus page, lotuscenter.org, we have lots of information on how you can provide these in the diet. Any questions?
So I think, yeah, maybe I'll kind of emphasize to our listeners that, you know, when you come to perimenopause, it's a transitional phase, and the background health of things like your gut or, you know, your dietary habits now, I think we could say, may become more apparent. Those imbalances may show up, because if they weren't there, it could help stabilize us through perimenopause, at least better. But if there's any underlying unaddressed issues, then now, you know, you may not think, oh, something's wrong with my gut. You might just think, oh, why am I having hot flashes? I thought I was doing everything right. But there, it sounds like there's, you know, there's something to look for. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And we have to look at all these. And this is what we do in Chinese medicine. We look at all these organ systems and we see, okay, what's going on here? So it's much more complex than just adding a progesterone cream in the second half of your luteal phase. So supporting women through perimenopausal transition, supporting women through menopause, it goes above and beyond just supplying hormones in the form of bioidentical and so on and so forth. And let me just note that a lot of women actually self-medicate. For example, I have a patient who was having hot flashes, and in her intake, she told me that the thing that worked for her was drinking soy milk. Well, yes, soy milk contains phytoestrogens, and it's going to temporarily soothe things. But what it also does is it really clogs the liver. It's a very difficult. It's a very, very difficult substance to digest. It's very heavily processed, and ultimately, what's going to result is the liver is going to be become congested. So again, so looking at, okay, what is the one thing that I can take to really help support my body through? If you were to ask, I would say top five, and it's the top five that I'm talking about. It's fats in the diet, essential fatty acids. A mineral-rich food coming from organic fruits and vegetables, organic meats, organic organ meats, correct enzymatic foods with good enzymatic properties and probiotic properties. Those are namely fermented foods, which again, they're all present in traditional diets. They're all present. These, if you go to an Indian restaurant, you get your little bits and pieces, you know, you get your little trays. It has everything that you could possibly want in terms of to promote digestion, to help the breakdown of those foods. And this is what we're looking at. And the final point that I'd like to make is when women have very, very, very severe hot flashes, for example, I'm saying hot flashes because it's one of the things that I see quite commonly, and we treat incredibly well, it's so successfully. I had a woman who came in with 25 hot flashes a day. She was counting them. And after one acupuncture treatment, it went down to two. So receiving acupuncture and herbal medicine in this time, especially if you're in the throes of a crisis, can stave off the need to go on a hormone replacement therapy, which again, it's a band-aid. It's going to just kick the can a little bit further down the road. You will eventually have to deal with these things. It may allow you the time to put all these nutritional needs in place and then come off the hormones. There's many ways of dealing with it. There are some women who suffer so much through this transition that I do send them to their naturopathic doctor to go and have some support hormonally. I do that, but it depends on where they are and how quickly we can get these other support systems in place to help them. So the main thing that we're looking at when it comes to hot flashes, for example, is the health of the liver. And what we do in Chinese medicine is we treat that liver. We treat the most effective formula to help hot flashes is a formula to help regulate liver function, and it works like a charm. People take it and their hot flashes completely disappear. It's really, really quite wonderful. So what affects the liver? Well, everything affects the liver. Life affects the liver. We live in a very polluted environment. We're exposed to 40,000 different chemicals that aren't approved. We've got genetically modified crops in the system. We also have women who've been on birth control pill, which from a Chinese standpoint has a congesting effect on the liver. Also, let me just point out with birth control, it will actually have an effect on the thyroid if you have an estrogen, excess estrogen, and especially synthetic estrogens, it's going to downregulate the thyroid. So that's just as an aside. But what we find is that by helping the liver detoxify, and this has to be done very carefully, because what happens is detoxification is all over the internet. You know, detox, do a 3-day juice, do a this, you know, balance your blood sugars by, you know, not eating for 7 days, this kind of stuff. It's actually incredibly dangerous, because what happens is once you convert toxins from fat soluble to water soluble to be excreted by the kidneys, if you don't have the nutritional foundation, if you don't have the methylation factors, okay, these are all nutrients, these are namely B complexes. If you don't have those in the diet and you have not got a good backup of those, you're not going to methylate toxins properly, you're not going to excrete toxins properly, they're going to float around, they're going to cause a lot of damage. And this is where people get very, very sick doing detoxification. So when a woman is in the throes of a transition, we will regulate the liver, but we'll do it gently. And so these are the instances where, for example, we say, okay, then we bring in Chinese dietary therapy into place. So how Chinese medicine works is it's not looking at nutritional content. It's not looking at, you know, levels of B complex or vitamin A, whatever it is. It's not looking at the nutritionals. It's looking at the energetics of food. And it's looking at how specific foods are going to affect the energetics of specific organs. Okay, and this is beautiful, and this is how we incorporate our understanding of Western nutrition with our understanding of Chinese nutrition and how it affects the energetics of the given organ. So, going back to the liver, if we do and we diagnose, we can diagnose a congested liver through pulse taking, through palpation, through looking at people's tongues, and through questionnaires. If we see that, we'll say, okay, you know what? You need to be eating some more cruciferous vegetables, because the cruciferous vegetables provide those B complexes, but they're also the energetics of cruciferous vegetables stimulate and regulate the liver. And funnily enough, one of the biggest supplements that's taken now for estrogen dominance is DIM, right? Don't ask me to say the name. I can't say it out. It's too complicated. But that is basically an extract from broccoli. And what it does is it regulates the liver, and that way it helps clearance of excess estrogens out of the system. So when we're looking at the individual patient, we'll look at the individual organ systems, and we'll say, well, look, you need to be eating more cruciferous vegetables. Likewise, if, for example, their thyroid is off kilter, we'll look at the liver as well, but we'll also look at the lung system. And so what a person needs, an individual. And let me just point out that no two women go through the menopausal transition in the same way. Why? There are common factors. Yes, there's common signs and symptoms. If not, we wouldn't be able to diagnose it. But as individuals, we are all going into it with a makeup, a different makeup, a different constitutional makeup. Our organ systems have different strengths and weaknesses. And so in addressing dietarily the needs that a specific woman has, we look at their specific makeup. What's happening vibrationally in their organ systems? Do they have a lung deficiency? Do they have a liver excess? Do they have a kidney or an adrenal deficiency? Are their blood sugars fluctuating? Do they have a spleen deficiency? And then we tailor everything according to what the main weakness or the main excess. And again, it's a system of checks and balances. It's a system of something is up and something is down, and how do you actually get it to balance out, looking at every different at all the different components of it, not just one individual. So yes, we can say eat cruciferous vegetables, but we might say eat cruciferous vegetables and have some organ meats, or have some black beans to support your kidneys and things along those lines. And then again, we also look at, okay, there's more hot flashes, there's more fluid retention, there's more dry skin. We go prescribing according to what the main complaint is.
Okay, yeah, and we did another show on perimenopause. I should share that link as well. But one thing we talked about was it's a great time to get support. And you made a good point. You know, there's a lot of things you can buy online, detox and do this cleanse or that. So I think there's some things you mentioned that are very safe. You know, try some clean organ meat, try broccoli. But obviously someone like you is a much more of an expert on the big picture. And going to someone like you, if someone's in the LA area, would just be just such a rich benefit to really understand what to focus on the most, what's the best step one, you know. So A, you feel emotionally supported, and B, you take the most effective path to your healing.
Correct. And it's all about empowerment as well. It's all about patient empowerment. This process is, it's actually a very beautiful process in the throes of crises, because women come through and they feel very different about life. And I think that's a function of no longer having that dominance of reproductive hormones in the system. The way they see life it is very, very different. And, you know, Christiane Northup, she's an MD who's written extensively on it. She basically calls it the second spring, this new identity that one has within themselves. But you have to go through a few transitions, bumps along the way. But how nutrition is key in supporting that, and having the guidance of a health practitioner who is well versed on the energetics of food, who's well versed in the nutritional aspects of foods, and can tailor things to you as an individual, it really is crucial to making this transition as smooth and as seamless as possible. And there are women out there, believe it or not, who go through menopause and they do not bat an eyelid. They do not have any issues whatsoever. And I think this is a function of lifestyle. This is a function of where they've come from. You know, we, as you were saying earlier, you know, we have these sociocultural issues. So in the 60s, women went on high doses of birth control pill. They had terrible times going through menopause. In the 80s and 90s, the low-fat diet. In the 90s, well, the 80s and 90s again, the introduction of HRT and hormone replacement therapy, and how that had a dramatic effect on how women went through menopause. But then in the 90s and 2000s is you have delayed childbearing age and women often having to need assisted reproductive techniques in order to get pregnant. You're also seeing that women in those situations who've had those procedures tend to have more need for support in making this transition. And again, if you're a professional, not even a professional, if you're a stay-at-home mom, you have 5 kids, you know, there are a lot of stresses and strains of that impose life imposes on the body. And correct nutritional support is everything, and food is love. And I said that in the last lecture, and I'll continue to repeat it. One has to be passionate about food. It really is. It really is what makes the world tick.
Yeah, and if you go to see Andrea in LA, she'll give you some free kraut, perhaps. her patient. That's so awesome.
It's good as well.
I'm sure. Yeah, this has been a great conversation, and I'd like to share more about my personal path with perimenopause. I'll probably do it on a future episode, but I'll just give a quick word of encouragement that, you know, I practice, you would guess, you would hope, a lot of great health habits. You know, I go to bed early, I think I eat well, and still have had a hard time. And I'm kind of uncovering some things now that, you know, probably have been going on for a long time that you couldn't really figure out. As much as I love online education, you can't figure it out without lab testing and the right practitioner. So now I'm treating some H. pylori, and I'm learning I'm very sensitive to oxalates in foods, and they're blocking my minerals. And I'm starting to feel, as much work as it's been to learn these things, I'm definitely very motivated and also starting to feel like it's starting to work, which is awesome. So if you're going through things, you think, why isn't this easier for me? I have such good habits. You know that there are things to be discovered. And it's a great time to do it. Like you said, it's this second spring, and you want to have the energy to move into that second phase of life. If you're feeling like you're overweight and you're fatigued and you're not yourself, there doesn't feel like a second phase in life. It feels like, I think there are a lot of women, you probably hear this, Andrea, who feel like, oh, this is the beginning of the end for me. You know, I'm becoming elderly. You shouldn't be getting elderly mm-hmm. in your 40s. You should be moving into some great phase where kids are out of the house and right. you can do what you like.
Right. Well, you know, with the delay of childbearing age, what I'm finding now is that a lot of women are going through perimenopausal transition at the same time as their children are going through adolescence, and that really does make for an explosive combination. Hormones are going in reverse in all directions. But yes, absolutely. And what you have, and this has really happened in the last, I'd say, 5 years, is you have practitioners of Chinese medicine who have gone out and studied functional medicine and who actually use functional medical testing in order to support how they instruct their patients. And so there is a wealth of information out there. And what you have with a practitioner of Chinese medicine is you have both things working in tandem to really, really provide, as you said, you know, H. pylori and how oxalates are blocking. You can check for all of those things. So what you're wanting is somebody who will leave no stone unturned, who will run nutritional panels on you, who will see what's going on in the gut and digestive system, and to provide the best possible support that way.
Yeah. And that's something you can do. I definitely encourage you to visit Andrea's website. Is it doc? I think I see it as .com, lotuscenter.com.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. Anything we missed you want to say before we wrap up?
Oh, I think I've.
You said enough to give us something to think about for a little while.
Well, yeah. Hopefully that's Go home and cook.
Learn. And we had just a show recently on fermented foods by a local chef. And you know, you don't have to start with making it your own way. Go to the store and buy it. It's at most natural groceries now. You know, there's farmers market time of year now. So you don't feel like you have to do everything from scratch. You can also just go to your community too, right?
No, absolutely. And you know, I'm as an individual, I'm passionate about gardening, and I'm passionate about, you know, food and cooking and making my own fermented stuff. But you know, not everybody has that passion. I get that. But there is so much available out there. So yes, the farmers markets are a wonderful place to go. We have lots of information on our website of different products that we recommend, products in terms of food products that we recommend patients take. And we go every year to the Natural Products Expo. I'm a little overwhelmed by those things, but yes, there's a lot of stuff out there, and there are beautiful websites as well. The Nourish Kitchen and Elena's Pantry are two really fabulous. Nourish Kitchen, in particular, fabulous websites on how to prepare foods and the nutritional qualities of foods, and it's really, really beautiful. So there's tons of information out there, and if you contact me directly, I'm more than happy to direct you in one direction or the other.
Well, thank you so much, Andrea. And I meant to mention, I'll just mention it in closing, people who are still listening, that Andrea and I went on a fun walk about a couple months ago in Vancouver, Canada. Yeah. We explored all those zones of Vancouver. Then my husband's like, when are you going to learn that Chinatown is always Skid Row? Why do you insist on always finding Chinatown in every city?
Yeah, but didn't we have fantastic
We food? Had a great time doing it, yeah.
We ate really well, which is, Vancouver's amazing. The food there is just incredible. Those eggs, the yolk, the color of the yolk of the eggs was something I have yet to witness. It was amazing. Mm,
yeah, culinary travel, that's another way to enjoy your food.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's anything that I watch on television, which I don't do very often, but it will be, you know, culinary shows, and it's all It's very interesting. I was watching, I'll close on this because I know you have to go. But the one show that I really enjoyed was, it's called Chef's Table. And it basically had, they interviewed 9 different chefs from around the world. And what really stood out to me were 2 things, the simplicity of the foods and the source of the foods. And these chefs are creating these incredible dishes, simple, but from organic, mineral-rich, nutrient-dense foods. And that's what makes a success. And it's really beautiful. So anyway, if you want inspiration, go and watch these shows.
Yeah, that's one thing I watch with my son. We like to watch cooking shows together. It's so fun. Yeah. Great. Well, I'm sure we'll keep in touch. And thank you so much for the great information. Again, if you want to follow up with Andrea, it's lotuscenter.com. And you can find this show and other episodes and all we do at bridgetdanner.com. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and then you'll know when the next one comes out. Thanks so much, everyone. Until next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.